Riders Captive Risk Assurance versus Oceanside Laundry, LLC. Justice Papik is recused in this matter. Mr. Covey, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Justices. Opposing counsel, may it please the court. My name is Chris Covey. I am the attorney for the appellant in this matter. We call it Campus Laundry. The technical name is Oceanside Laundry, and I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. This is one in a series of cases involving Applied Underwriters Captive Risk Assurance Company. This court's ruled on two of these cases recently, and there's six or seven in the queue for an appeal. This one's a little different. This one doesn't go to the heart of the jurisdictional issues, which you've addressed in some form and are about to address in several more. This one didn't quite get that far. In this case, Applied Underwriters, an Iowa company, I'm sorry, OCRA. It's very important I keep that distinction, as this court recently ruled. OCRA filed suit against a California company for amounts allegedly due under an agreement called an RPA, a reinsurance participation agreement. They served Campus Laundry in California by getting a process server in California to go to their offices. The process server handed it to someone and then filled out an affidavit saying that they gave it to John Doe, a, quote, person in charge. Shortly thereafter, they filed a motion for default judgment. My client learned of this, retained us. We came in to fight the default judgment, and our defense was there was no proper service. We submitted an affidavit of the principal saying that nobody in charge, nobody that was an officer of the company got served. And the first error that the district court made was entering that default judgment to begin with, because there was no proper service. There was no service under Nebraska law. Nebraska law does not allow for a private process server without leave of court. And although our laws do allow for service under the other jurisdiction's law, and California does allow service by private process server, the statute very specifically says if you're going to do that, you have to serve one of these people, the president, the CEO. I'm not going to read the statute to you. What it doesn't include is that service on the, quote, person in charge who is unidentified is valid. So it's clearly invalid under California law, and there was no leave in Nebraska for a process server to begin with.
Did you file a motion challenging service of process at any point, and does it matter?
No, and Your Honor, I would say no. The burden of proof on a default judgment is to first prove service. If they fail to do that, the court should have denied the default judgment, leaving my client unserved. I shouldn't have had to come in and assert all of the other jurisdictional defenses that I would have at that point in time. At that point, the default judgment should have been denied, and he should have started over and achieved service, and then we would take it down the road. But failing to do that, that's where this case should stop at that point in time. This court should remand and say,
How would that procedurally work? How is the judge is supposed to search this out?
I'm sorry, I don't follow the question.
Well, on your service issue, you have no one else. There's no one on the other side at that point in time for the default motion, is there?
Well, because he hasn't achieved service.
But I think that given human nature, it's not likely that someone comes in for a default and also says, but my service isn't good.
Well, but that would be a new law. If you were going to change the law of service and say, if you challenge a default judgment on the basis of service, you automatically waive service. That would be a change in the law, and you would have a situation where you could then no longer challenge service once a default judgment motion is filed.
My question becomes, how, in an adversarial system, how is it brought to the attention of the trial court that service may have been improper?
Well, several ways. One, in a lot of these default judgment cases, the default judgment's been entered and someone tries to go collect, and that's when they find out about it, and there's a mechanism to challenge a default judgment there. Two, in this particular case, when my client learned that the default judgment hearing was proceeding, which was not through proper service, then they retained Nebraska counsel and said, go in and fight this. So I still feel like I may be avoiding the meat of your question. I don't mean to do that, but...
Well, it was contested by means of your motion to set aside the default judgment, wasn't it?
Well, that raises the second issue, which is, was service waived when I filed the motion to set aside the default judgment? And I would argue that if that's the law, and Miller speaks to this issue, but didn't get to the personal jurisdiction piece of it, if that's the law, and that once you come in and request that a motion to be set aside be granted, that you're putting parties in an unfair catch-22 there. Because what's the other option? Sit back on the default judgment and then come before this court and hope that they were right on service? And it's a choice that the litigant shouldn't have to make.
Are you importing some of the jurisprudence with respect to making an appearance and waiving things?
Yeah, absolutely. And you'll hear Mr. Silver argue this, and it was in the briefs, that the notion that once you, how do you characterize the request to set aside a default judgment? Does that go to the level of a general appearance, in which case you've lost service? And what Miller says is, yes, but you haven't lost the ability to go back and assert that as a defense. So it's a bit circular, but that's what the court in Miller held was, by filing your motion, and again, that motion was A, filed before the ruling on the special appearance, and two, asserted some additional defenses earlier in the proceedings than we did. We did assert, for the default judgment part of it, meritorious defenses, and there's an affidavit, and that's fully briefed. But as far as procedurally, what we're asking this court to do is remand with an order that remand with a reversal of the original default judgment order, and then nothing that happened after that, it was all void ab initio. It never should have occurred. We never should have had to be put in that box having to go in and seek relief, because what Miller does say is that's not retroactive. It doesn't go backwards and cure the defects in service just because you've entered what may be considered a general appearance. The second, and if the court disagrees with that, then the district court was clearly wrong in entering a default judgment here. The two prongs of a default judgment are a prompt motion to set it aside, which was made 18 days after the default judgment here.
You mean clearly wrong in refusing to set it aside?
Yes, clearly wrong, and it was an abuse of discretion when he refused to set it aside. It was promptly filed, and the second prong of that is whether or not a meritorious defense was asserted. That can be in a tendered answer. It can also be in the form of an affidavit, which we chose to do here. The defendant here set forth several defenses, including service, jurisdiction, and then also issues that this court will perhaps ultimately decide with respect to the legality of the RPA under California law. There's some briefing in there that you'll see that the California courts have universally said that this RPA is unlawful. It was not filed with the California Department of Insurance, and therefore they're not enforcing it. In fact, one you're about to see, a California court has already ruled that they won't enforce the forum selection clause. So there's little debate that, and again, this court doesn't have to rule on the merits, and it won't. The question is there a controversy worthy of judicial review? I submit that we submitted several defenses that are all worthy of judicial review, that it was error, in fact, rising to the level of abuse of discretion for the district court not to set aside that default judgment. And with that, I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Can I ask you one quick? What did Judge Coffey use as his reasoning to deny the motion to set aside?
He did not. His opinion is one line. It simply said the parties came before the court and your motion is denied.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Silver, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. Your Honors, may it please the court. Jeffrey Silver on behalf of Applied Underwriters Captive Risk Assurance Company, Inc., offer for the benefit of my argument. Standard of review here is abuse of discretion. I don't believe Judge Coffey abused his discretion.
What was his rationale?
Well, he didn't really articulate his rationale.
So what possible rationale is there?
Well, I think the possible rationale is they got two bites of the apple here, and I think you have to understand the chronology of the events here. We got service on them in January 25th, 2017. We didn't file a motion for default judgment until March 29th of 2017. Sent the notice of default judgment to the same address at which they were served the original summons. And I'll come back, Justice Stacy, to your question about whether or not I got permission to do that or not in a second. So then we filed a motion for default judgment. We called it up for hearing on April 17, 2017. On that day, for the first time, Mr. Kobe appears and says we're going to challenge jurisdiction. Our affidavit in support of the motion for default judgment did not address the issue of jurisdiction because there was no appearance and no adversary at that time. All of our affidavit for support of the motion for default judgment went to the merits of the issue of whether or not this client or the defendant owed the money. And to this day, there's not a single affidavit offered by the defendant that indicates they don't owe the money or that they didn't sign the reinsurance participation agreement.
But the default wasn't entered until May 4th, though.
That's correct. We had a hearing. We offered our evidence, which was an affidavit from Travis J. Cook, to support the amount that was due and owing and the invoices that went to it. Mr. Colby offered his affidavit alleging that there was no jurisdiction. Judge Coffey then issued his order finding and issuing a default judgment. So in my sense...
And what was his reasoning about service
in
that?
Judge, I would love to be able to articulate, Your Honor, what his reasoning was, but I can't, other than the fact that he listened to the arguments. We had briefs that were submitted. He considered the briefs, and I don't know that he has to articulate. Perhaps it would be better for my position in front of you if he did, but he didn't. So all we're left with is the fact that he issued essentially a one-line order that says, I find that a default judgment should be entered.
What are the merits of this argument about the method of service?
The method of service raises an interesting question, because if you look at the reinsurance participation agreement, which is attached as an exhibit to the complaint, paragraph 14 of that indicates that the participant, in this case the defendant, irrevocably and unconditionally submits to the exclusive jurisdiction of the courts of Nebraska for the purpose of any purpose of this agreement and agrees to accept service of process. So should I have gone and gotten permission from the court to get the service issued the way it was? Yes. So I think that answers your initial question. But the fact of the matter is they were served. And to suggest somehow that the service that was done by personal service on a person that was unknown somehow defeats jurisdiction, I disagree with that. This court has always held that the purpose of a summons is to provide notice to the other party, to provide them with an opportunity to hear on due process. There's no question they knew about this.
Okay, so let's fast forward to whether or not they've articulated some reasonable defenses.
Well, I think when you take a look at the issue of vacating a default judgment, one of the things you have to show is why did you not respond to the complaint in a timely manner? Not only that you have a meritorious defense. So I think the court in its decisions has always indicated that there's two prongs. One, why did you not answer it? Give us a reasonable excuse. In Miller and the other cases, you have somebody who is a low-level employee who gets the summons and doesn't do anything with it, and you get an affidavit from that person indicating, okay, this is what happened, explainable and understandable that the court would say, you know what, we're not going to issue a default judgment because some low-level employee didn't do what they were supposed to.
Do we even know if that person was an employee? That person in charge, do we know from the record whether that person was an employee or a manager or an officer?
We have no indication of that in the record.
Person in charge of what?
Well, the person, again, just like not having any help from Judge Coffey on his order, I don't have an answer for that. But the fact of the matter is when they came in, now, the question I guess you have to ask yourself is...
Do we have to interpret a California statute here?
I'm sorry?
Do we have to interpret a California statute?
Well, the California statute that provides for service says you must serve an officer, either president, vice president, or a chief executive officer. I am not going to sit here before this court and tell you that somebody who is unnamed was either a president, vice president, or chief executive. So I don't think you have to interpret California law. Where I was going was to say that somehow they must have known about this because Mr. Colby came in on the day of the hearing on the motion for default judgment.
So you're going to an actual notice, and now we move on to the second thing about the merits.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm saying.
Yeah, that there was actual notice, because everything that was done in this case, all of the invoices, the notice of default judgment, and the service were all done at the same address, 675 Beach Street in Watsonville, California. Every single piece of paper that was sent as an invoice which are attached to Mr. Koch's affidavit, went to that address. Service was had on that address, acknowledging it wasn't to a person who was a president, but some, quote, unknown person. The motion for default judgment was sent to that same address.
So at the default judgment, you did conventional things like we've served them and here's how much they owe us. You proved up.
Yes, we did. Okay. By Mr. Koch's affidavit, which I think is Exhibit 1 to the Bill of Exceptions, he articulated who he was. He attached all of the invoices that were sent to this very same address and indicated that the amount that was due and owing was approximately $106,000.
The specific allegations with respect to perfecting service were what?
I'm sorry?
The specific allegations in the affidavit that went to perfecting service of process were what?
There was nothing in the affidavit of Mr. Koch with respect to service because that was not an issue.
Can you get a default judgment without proving up service on it on the defendant?
No, there was service in the court file. There was a return of summons in the court file.
Did you ask the court to take judicial notice of it?
I did not ask the court to take judicial notice of that.
Does that matter?
I'm sorry?
Does that matter?
I don't think so, because I think the court, when it looked at the file, I think the court takes judicial notice of that without me formally asking the court to take judicial notice of the file upon which it's acting.
Might not have even looked at that, though. Isn't that correct?
Well, he looked at it because he specifically talked about service in his order. He did reference service in his order, and I can get it for you, but
and I guess my question was sort of going to what the evidence was to support that. I mean, you say it was simply in the record.
It was in the record with respect to the return of summons. And the other part is, we did not understand or were prepared to fight a challenge to jurisdiction because that challenge came the day or actually 15 minutes before the hearing was scheduled to start.
Was any continuance requested?
There was not a continuance requested. So unless you have any other questions, you've been here a long time this morning, and so I'll yield the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 2 minutes, Mr. Covey.
Thank you. I don't believe I'll use it all. Just two quick points. One, the notion that Mr. Silver wanted us to provide an affidavit from an unidentified person is untenable. We don't know who it is. We can't get an affidavit from them. And two, his argument seems to be, he seems to be somewhat backing off the we satisfied California law and instead going with they showed up so they must have known about it. If that's the case, we can just strike 12b-2 right out of the rule book. Then no one can ever challenge service because the only way to challenge service is to show up in court and challenge it. So that position is also untenable. Service was improper, and we would ask that the court remand with an order to reverse the original default judgment or in the alternative.
Did you ever explain to the court why you didn't respond other than to say we never got service?
No, the evidence in the record from Mr. Anderson is that these enumerated list of people, the president, vice president, it goes on, were never served. That was the evidence that was put into the record in addition to what the affidavit showed. But no, there was no, but again, that argument Mr. Silver made, which is they didn't explain, you know, what took them so long. If there's never valid service to begin with, we can't be blamed for not doing anything about it. What were we going to do if there was a missed attempt at service? If there's no service, there's no service. So does it really matter what happens then until they try to do something with that case? Are we, you know, somebody emails them a copy of the complaint and says, hey, I saw that you got sued in Nebraska. I'm a Nebraska lawyer. It's a new marketing tool that folks are using. And they say, well, we haven't been served. Do they then have a duty to go out and say, well, geez, we better move to dismiss this case, even though there hasn't been service on us because we found out about it from some solicitation?
The unusual feature about this is you actually were at the default judgment hearing.
I was, yes, because, and again, the record, well, I see I'm out of time, and I didn't tell you the question,
thought.
So I guess I'll
I don't know that I had
take
one
my
question.
Lead. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. The court is adjourned and you are excused.